early signs emerge of a new Russian-American relationship, and Moscow picks up two more friends in Europe as Bulgaria and Moldova elect new presidents. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFRL. Joining me in the studio is senior RFRL editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Brian.
And also with me is Mark Galliotti, a senior research fellow at the Institute of International Relations in Prague. Welcome to the briefing, Mark.
Hi there, guys.
So Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says Donald Trump's foreign policy approach is phenomenally close to that of Vladimir Putin. And Trump says he wants to have a telephone conversation with Putin very soon. But in a piece in Foreign Policy, Mark, you note that this warm and fuzzy feeling may not last very long. Why?
Well, I think that when Peskov says they're phenomenally close, maybe it's more kind of pheromonally close. In the sense of, I mean, they're both sort of pushing this sort of alpha male sort of image. But more to the point, actually, the problem is precisely that their policies are so similar, that they are both committed to their own nation in a very zero-sum kind of way. Neither of them believe in the entanglements of alliances and so forth, except insofar as it directly and immediately enhances their own country, and certainly not with any kind of belief that the needs of the many ever outweigh the needs of the one. So I think in that context, almost inevitably, their interests are soon going to come into conflict. So regardless of the personal chemistry between the two, and I'm not even convinced that that's going to work out so well, but regardless of that, when it comes down to it, America's interests are not Russia's, Russia's interests are not America's, and both of them are committed to their respective corners.
He also made a very interesting point about unpredictability in that piece.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. It's something that generally scares the bejesus out of diplomats, no matter which country they're in, is the question of predictability. For so long, Putin has been able to play this card, that he has been the bad boy of geopolitics. He has been the one that, in a sense, has broken the rules and pushed the boundaries, and it's the West that has been the responsible adult and dealt with that and smoothed out the problems and tried to reach some kind of a compromise. Now, we still don't know quite what a Trump presidency is going to look like, but I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that actually the Trump presidency can be, in its own way, be exceedingly hard to predict. And not necessarily an America that you can easily bluff. So it might well be that, in fact, Putin now has his own Putin to have to deal with.
Interesting thoughts. Steve, what are your thoughts?
Well, I guess I'd just build a little bit on what Mark said about, you know, these are two presidents, or president-elect and president, who are dedicated to, you know, their country's interests above all, or say they are. I agree. I think that's a potential, you know, sticking point in the relationship, because to me that's what happened with the reset. You know, at some point, at least in retrospect, Russia and Putin said, you know, okay, we went along with this, but it turned out that the U.S. was just trying to get us to do, you know, things that were in its interest, go along with them. And you know, so I could see the same thing happening with the Trump Putin relationship, another aspect is, you know, we were talking about what does Putin have to offer the United States, and another way of looking at it is that, you know, what can Trump really bring to the United States by improving relations with Putin and with Russia? You know, what are the big cards that he could bring back that would sort of justify that? And combined with, I think, you know, there's expectations that there will be at least some kind of continuity in terms of the U.S. foreign policy, you know, elites kind of having some continuity. You know, you do wonder how much this relationship is really going to change.
Yeah, no, I again, with the quid pro quo, where's the quid pro quo? We know what Russia wants. What can Russia give to the United States? And I think the scope for disappointment is very, very broad here. The Russians were disappointed in the reset because they basically were hoping that it was basically a new Yalta, where they're going to get everything they want. Well, it was never about that. And what are they going to get out of this? What is the United States going to get in return? I know what the Russians want. We don't know what the Russians are capable of giving.
I think the biggest virtue for the Russians is not, as it were, what America will give, but whether actually just simply America retreats, withdraws, and just there's large areas of the world about which it doesn't really care. That's, I think, going to be the greatest virtue from that.
Mm-hmm. All right. On another topic, pro-Moscow candidates have won the presidencies of Bulgaria and Moldova. Igor Dodon will be the new Moldovan president, and Rumen Radev will be the new Bulgarian president. Meanwhile, Bulgaria's pro-Western prime minister, Boyko Borisov, has announced his intention to resign. Mark, it seems Putin's on a bit of a roll here. I mean, Brexit, Trump, the Georgian election certainly went in a way that was favorable to him, Moldova, Bulgaria, and guess what? We got France and Germany on the horizon next year.
Well, yes, but I would suggest it's not so much that Putin's on a roll makes it sound as if he's doing that. Unfortunately, what this is precisely a part of a fragmentary process that is going on within the West, which obviously benefits Putin. But if we look, I mean, if we look at both of these elections, it's frankly because of the failures of the candidates whom we in the West liked and who were favourable to us. I mean, on the whole, reforms that were stalled, corruption and so forth. You know, if we look at Radev in Bulgaria, I mean, this is a guy, he's an Air Force general, he trained in the States, he's absolutely solidly pro-NATO, there's no question about that. And Bulgaria needs to be fairly pro-EU because it benefits from that dramatically. So I think we need to be slightly cautious. This is not, I would say, people who are pro-Russia. They're not actually thinking, yes, we want to be Russian allies. It's more that they represent a failure of elites that promised reform but failed for a variety of reasons. And I think that is the biggest problem. It's actually we are coming to be bitten by the gap between expectation and reality in the West.
Mm. Now, and you can say Dodon in Moldova is a much more unambiguously pro-Moscow candidate. Do you expect these trends to continue, both Steve and Mark? I mean, do you expect this trend to continue? Because we got some big elections coming up next year.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to predict. One result that could possibly occur is, you know, that these results increase kind of the concern or fear that, you know, of kind of a domino effect almost. I mean, certainly, I think these results will be causing concern, you know, in places like Ukraine, whether they'll sort of add to the momentum in Western Europe. You know, I think they might have little effect. You know, I think the voters there are thinking about their own mm-hmm. interests.
So, Mark, do you see a domino effect? Do you see this wave hitting Germany and France as well?
Well, again, I think we have to sort of understand how this wave works. Absolutely. What plays in Bulgaria is not going to be playing in Bremen. Very different countries, very different issues. But on the other hand, the more it contributes to a sense that the European Union and a whole kind of Western liberal order is failing, the more it does empower the kind of radical populists who we are seeing on the rise, and in some ways who are at the moment making the running. I don't honestly believe that the majority of the people of Europe actually want to see the collapse of the European Union or whatever. But on the other hand, elections are won by those who actually come out to vote. And unfortunately, it's the populist and disruptive angle at the moment which is mm-hmm. able to generate much more enthusiasm. And this is what we've seen elsewhere. So unfortunately, I think that although in common sense terms, I would think that neither France nor Germany should go in that direction, common sense doesn't necessarily win in times like this.
We've been learning that repeatedly. And also, I would add, yes, Putin did not create the situation, but he's skillfully exploiting it, very skillfully. French Republican Party has primary elections this month, which will probably choose the candidate that will end up facing Marine Le Pen in the second round. Whether it will be Nicolas Sarkozy or Juppé, we'll see. German parliament, the French presidential election will be in the summer. The German parliamentary elections will be toward the end of next year. So it's going to be hold on to your hats. We're in for another wild ride in the coming year. On that note, we'll wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at the stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast. Joining me here in the studio has been senior RFRL editor Steve Gutterman and Mark Galeotti of the Institute of International Relations in Prague. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.